Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, it is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are the Morning Shift with Ali Mack, Mike Johnson, Bo Morgan. Dylan is hanging out behind the glass, and this hour is brought to you by Zero Res. Book an appointment today with Zero Res, Atlanta's best carpet cleaning service. These guys, up to the minute, are reviewing this film. We're going to get to that in a moment. I do want to say it's fascinating to me that I brought the fact that I haven't gotten mean tweets from anyone and then immediately got a bunch of followers. Like, everyone's waiting for me to say something dumb.
Yeah, got my finger on the button, Allie. You just wait.
I mean, don't wait.
You just wait.
Don't worry. I will say something dumb.
You're in the good, though, because you were pledging your allegiance to, obviously, the Georgia Bulldogs yesterday.
Go Dogs.
You're feeling good. I get a lot of Bama hate, but that's all in fun, right? It's all in fun.
I will say that it made me laugh on Saturday night after Florida loses. At Twitter's like, oh, you better check on him. It made me laugh. Like, it didn't bother me one bit. Why would that bother me? Like, because I know what they're doing, and I have no issue with that. It is funny, though. It's like, hey,
100%.
You know,
when they say my name, make a noise.
That's what college football is about. I mean, you know, the fandom of, I'm going to talk trash when your team loses, and you'll talk trash when your team wins.
It's just like the school play yard. If they like you, they tease you, right?
Yeah. I also gave Allie a complete breakdown on Catcher in the Rye earlier.
Oh, that's
during the commercial break.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. He broke it all down for me.
She loved that.
Duluth High School didn't make me read that
one. Loved that.
Look, I know my books.
So we are all still kind of asking the what ifs of Sunday's game, Falcons-Bucks 23-20. I know Koo is the easy go-to, but y'all have been watching film all morning. What do you want to go into first? Because we've got the good, the bad, and the ugly here.
Well, I think we need to break down some offensive line play, Mike, and I want you to do that. I will just say this real quick. The edge rushers that were brought in are getting a lot of crap.
That's where I was going to start, too.
For not doing... Apparently... Some, I'm not one of them because I actually understand what I'm watching, but some, even at this radio station, think that they didn't do anything and that they were swallowed up or that they contributed nothing. If you go back and watch the film, and Mike, I know you saw some of it too, and what was Nick Pentecost, I think is the guy's name, Pentecost or something, that, and maybe he actually tweeted out every...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Every rush that James Pierce Jr. had.
Mm-hmm.
James Pierce Jr. actually won more than Abdul Carter, Michael Williams, and a few other rookie edge rushers. What happened was that Mike, and I want you to correct what you think are wrong, is that the interior D linemen, they basically, that you can say lost contain, you can use whatever terminology, but they basically rushed without discipline.
They didn't get any push, and they had no gap integrity. That's the exact terminology I would use. Brandon Dorlus is going side to side, and he was fine, but there's no push up the middle, and when that happens, quarterback's going to step up, he's going to escape, and he's going to get a first down with his legs.
But in that thing, if you use discipline, and if you're not going to get a push, just stalemate it. And then at least Baker has to step up and find that lane instead of step up and just never stop and go in a full go. But they allowed themselves to get to rush downfield laterally, where they went it was like a Mack truck lane where they could ride right through it.
Yeah, and I don't want to spend too long on this because I do want to talk about offensive line play and some of the craziness that was the inside the 10-yard line in those situations. But you're right. And look, I don't think you ask so much on some of these third downs, especially when it's third and long, for the defensive tackles like a Dorlus to keep gap integrity. But you would like one of them in the middle to, kind of fall off of the block. you know, you saw the first third down where Baker scrambled and Caden Ellis steps up and makes an open field tackle and they force a fourth down. That's kind of what you're looking for. There were just numerous times if he escapes left and he escapes right that he was able to make throws on the run. He was able to run for first downs, and that's the frustrating thing. So, yeah, my good, Allie, to answer your question, was the edge rushers. I don't think a lot of people understand they actually played really well. The interior of this defense and this defensive line, to me, is what lets you down in terms of the pass rush. So, frustrating to watch. My bad.
Right.
My bad was Zach Robinson. Zach Robinson, we ran more inside zone and more duo than I can remember, which I've been calling for variance in the run game. We didn't run a wide zone with Bijan Robinson. It felt like the entire first half. I know we did, but it felt like there wasn't any. A lot of inside zone, some mid zone kind of concepts, duo run plays where you're trying to create double teams. I thought it was bad, and it was bad in terms of the way they operated it, but at no point was anybody on Tampa Bay's defense having to guess where the ball was going.
Can I ask you about that real quick? Because I want you to break down a couple of plays that you have in mind, but do you think some of that, and look, I know everybody wants to talk about Vita Vea and everything he does, and look, he's phenomenal, and he whipped Lindstrom, Neusel, and Bergeron a lot, right?
Yeah.
But is some of that because of the speed that they do have on these edges? Because they've got some big guys up front, but they also got Diaby and Hassan Reddick and Anthony Nelson's another guy that made some plays. Like, they have some speed out there and some physical. And their corners are quick, too. And they're outside of their perimeter. They're very quick and they're physical. They're not necessarily the best coverage corners, but they're good against the run.
Here's the problem. If you have guys that are that fast and that quick, especially at the second level and especially on the exterior, you've got to make them guess.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make them guess. You have to, and I hate the term eye candy, but I might pass out if we fake a handoff to one person and hand it to somebody else. I might pass out. It would be unbelievable. Like, I might just fold over and go, oh, my God, it finally happened. We have, whichever way the running back steps, that's the way the ball's going. I mean, it is just as clear-cut as it could possibly be. And that's kind of what we are to an extent. That's why wide zone works so well, because you run it a million different times and there's no guessing. But Lord of mercy, we tried to run, like I said, inside zone. We tried to run duo. We tried to create some powerful double teams. That's just not the team you're going to want to do it against. And if you are going to do that, give me something at the second level that leads this linebacker's eyes over here or this linebacker's eyes over here, because it didn't feel like we had any type of orbit motion, whip motion, exit motion, none of that stuff. We didn't see any of it from Zach Robinson's game plan, and which is a letdown to me, because I thought given an offseason that we might see a little bit more variance in the way we operate this run game. We didn't see any of it. Aside from like a wishbone formation on the goal line, we didn't see any of it.
And I know you don't hate the pistol running out of the pistol.
No, I don't. It has its place. It has its place. The pistol has its place to me, and I know that people hate it because it's short yards. It is what it is, man. Pistol has a place. It operates well. It allows the defense not to be able to get an understanding of which side the running back's on, so you don't know which way they're handing it, this, that, and the other. But there is a place for pistol. I'm not one of these people, and I've heard some yesterday, they're going to get on the radio and say, get rid of the pistol. Everybody in the freaking NFL runs pistol in some version.
The pistol doesn't matter if you get your ass kicked up front right off the point of attack.
And that leads me to the ugly. And I kind of laughed because Allie's sitting next to me this morning when I'm watching back the tape. And I watched it yesterday, too. But I'm watching back over it, and I'm like, Jesus, this is bad.
I mean, you were emotionally distraught. Like, what are we doing?
Because it's not just getting whipped. It's not just getting whipped. And a lot of times when you are just, you know, just falling on your face trying to knock somebody off the ball, it's not just that. It's bad all the way around. We ran the duo on the third down. The first third down, when we get inside the 10, it's third and one from the 2.
This is the 15 play 90 or 18 play.
Correct.
91 yard scoring drive that went put you ahead 20-17.
It's third and one from the 2 yard line, and what happened is, so essentially when you run duo, you try to create double teams. They had a 5-man front. They had Vita Vea head up to Ryan Neusel. They had a guy over the guard and a guy over the right guard, a guy over the left guard. Makes it very hard to create double teams. If you're Matthew Bergeron, you essentially have two options, right? It is 3-for-3. There's two down linemen, Vita Vea and whoever's over the top of Matthew Bergeron, and y'all have to climb up to the linebacker at the next level. All right, so you're either, if you're Matthew Bergeron, you're either going to help Jake Matthews or you're going to help Ryan Neusel. All right, the problem is the linebacker flies towards Jake Matthews, and Matthew Bergeron is kind of left in no man's land where he looks like an iron cross right there in the middle. He's just got hands on the three technique and on the nose guard, and there's zero push. For a play built on double teams, you got none. And you also had a linebacker flying free. Compound that. I know we're up against it. Compound that with the next play. And, Bo, I know you're watching it right now. The fourth down play where Michael Penix luckily stretches the ball near the sideline over the first down marker, and you had to review it to be able to get the first down. We don't even block the nose guard. We don't block him at all. Ryan Neusel and Chris Lindstrom identified two different guys as Mike linebackers, which that's Ryan Neusel's job, but the guy he identifies is a safety. Now, that's a game plan thing. I'm not going to say whether or not he was supposed to do it. I don't know. All right? But you also have it. I believe it was Levante David on the right, and Chris Lindstrom's going, oh, that's the Mike linebacker, right? That's the linebacker. We got the four down linemen and the Mike. That's got to be the guy we're blocking. Neither one of them blocked the guy in front of them. And well, they're both looking at two different linebackers off the ball, and nobody blocks the nose guard. And then Elijah Wilkinson falls. He falls.
Well, that
he falls down. He just falls. He trips and he falls.
Yeah, that's the first thing you see. That's the first thing I saw Sunday watching. Yeah. I'm watching it live. Wilkinson just falls trying to come out of his stance.
That is as bad of a fourth down rep as I can possibly imagine, given the scenario and everything else that comes along with that play.
The worst, and I don't know and you kind of explain how it happened, but it looks like Neusel and Lindstrom both try to give that hand like they're helping.
Yes.
And Kalijah Kansey just runs right through both of them.
Exactly.
And it's like,
dude, you probably should block that guy.
But if you go back and watch it, if Wilkinson doesn't fall down and he can get something of Reddick, Penix could maybe step that way. And it looks like Kyle Pitts is about to come open right at the goal line.
That's what makes you sick.
And you might have scored there. And now look, it all worked out in the end. But man, that was a bad, you're right. That's a really bad sequence.
That was a terrible.
Good job breaking that
terrible
down.
Terrible sequence.
I mean, considering what you saw reviewing the film, I'm sure up at Flowery Branch they're seeing the same thing. So hopefully some lessons have been learned before the Falcons head to Minnesota this Sunday. Crossing our fingers that Drake London and Darnell Mooney are back in that game. Coming up, we're going to go in the huddle. What is the fate of Russell Wilson as QB1? Brian Daboll has spoken. It's next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is the morning shift. I'm Allie Mack with Mike Johnson, Bo Morgan, Dylan behind the glass. Before we get to In the Huddle, it is Tuesday. Top 5 Tuesday is on deck at 7:40. Bo is in charge today. Do you want to talk about your category again?
Yeah, look, in honor of the Falcons' first road game of the year, regular season road game, I think I'd do top 5 places, road games and environments, places to play, the hardest places to play, the top 5. And my list is probably going to differ from what some common thought processes are and knowledges, but I do have a couple of honorable mentions. There is a tie on the list because I think that one of them I've been to just once. Have I been there twice? I can't remember, but I know once. And we won, but it was an awesome atmosphere, and it's gotten harder as the team's gotten better. The other is a place that's just, no matter what, is always hard to win. I'll get to those.
I'll be curious, and I want to hear from people during the wake-up call today, too, like which stadiums have you traveled to?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that's really, really cool. And there's some Falcons fans that I think, and I've talked to many of them that, you know, once a year try to go to an away game. Sometimes that's a flight. Sometimes that's, you know, you're playing at Tampa or at Carolina or, you know, even at Nashville sometimes. So I'll be curious to see how many guys we can get to call in that have actually attended some of these away games and, you know, knew what the – or maybe it's a fan of that team. So interesting to see.
And the point of reference, I've been to every stadium in current rotation, and I think I've probably been to like 35 in total NFL stadiums that you know, that have obviously gone away. So I think I have a decent pull. And in the one I didn't put on there, I'll go ahead and tell you one I didn't put on there. It was Buffalo. And it's not because it's not hard. It's not. It's extremely difficult to play in for quite a few reasons, including weather, which is one of the factors in this list.
Well, you are very experienced in all the stadiums, so I am curious to hear. I am curious to hear your list. That'll be coming up at 7:40. Now let's go ahead and talk about the Falcons' next opponent. The Vikings had an incredible comeback to win over the Bears last night, 27-24. Now the Falcons head to Minnesota this week. So did that comeback make you take a second look at the Vikings for Sunday's game?
Definitely made me take a second look at J.J. McCarthy and Justin Jefferson. You know, right? I think that's the combination you saw that hooked up for a touchdown and, you know, seemed to get things going. There was a point, you know, almost at halftime, I believe, where I looked down and Justin Jefferson had one catch. And you're like, dude, if I'm J.J. McCarthy, I am trying to find him. And of course, Chicago knows that, so they're going to do everything they can to take him away. But obviously, nice job by Kevin O'Connell and company of making sure they dig deep in the second half, draw up some good plays. And Caleb Williams went quietly into the night, to borrow a term from Independence Day, man. The guy was just – they did not operate at a very high level there in the second half. Both these teams awful on third down, too, by the way. Ding.
25%. Both. Yeah. 3 for 12 each team. Crazy. Look, I am actually glad they won because I don't want them to be the more desperate team going home. It does make me, though, fear a little bit that McCarthy has a little that confidence going into a home game. That's a place where, Ali, you don't want to get down early.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you – I know that there's no place you really go on the road, but that is as bad of a place to get down early because it kind of – it's extremely loud, and it can kind of steamroll. I've seen it happen to us there.
I'll be the first one to say that I don't really understand the NFL scheduling model. How is it that we draw Minnesota back-to-back years at Minnesota?
Well, last year – well, it's because you finished second in the division the last 2 years, and so have they. That's what it is.
Why do they get the home game then?
I don't know how that rotates around.
Okay. I don't know.
I can't tell you, but I do know that you rotate divisions because last year we did not play Detroit.
No.
Nope. We didn't play Chicago. Yeah. So that was when we played the North. I'm not sure how that part it goes into it, but I know that when you finish second, you play. If you play every second place team in the conference that you play in, other than the division that you are going against that year, which you play all those teams anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Unfortunate.
It rotates in when you play the division. Sorry, Allie.
There were some questions yesterday if Russell Wilson would start for the Giants in week 2. Head coach Brian Daboll has spoken on it.
Do you intend to start Russell Wilson this week?
Yes. It's a tough game. Again, like I said yesterday, that game just doesn't fall on Russell Wilson. You got to do a better job collectively, coaching, playing, but Russ will be the starter.
Is he using his words very carefully there?
I think so. And I think that they're at Dallas this week, if I'm not mistaken. I believe they play at Dallas Sunday at 1:00. So I think if you're going to start Jackson Dart, you don't, and we talked about this last year with Michael Penix. It's very, very similar. It's like you don't want to put him in. And actually, we were going to Minnesota when a lot of this conversation happened. It's like you don't want to put him in against a pass rush like that and a defense like that when you're on the road. You don't want to ask Jackson Dart to make that his first start. And I think he understands that if Jackson Dart is going to fare well, and that everybody else around him is going to have to play well as well, you know, and so let's clean that up and then we'll put Jackson Dart in a position to succeed. You don't want to ruin the kid by putting him in week 2 of his rookie season.
Yeah, I actually kind of disagree. I think he's chomping at the bit to put him in. I think he wants to get Jackson Dart out there as soon as he can to prove that he needs to keep his job because he's got the future and he's the guy to train him. Look what I did with Josh Allen. The quicker I get Jackson Dart, the quicker I can have him playing at a high level and this team maybe winning some games late to save my job. I know.
What do you think is holding him back then?
It's got to be something with the front office and ownership, right? I mean.
I just think it's a situation. That was my point. It's like, I'm sure he wants to put him in very, very soon. I just think situation, you have to be very careful.
I just don't understand drafting guys in the first round. I think Tom Brady has said this well. You're putting guys in too soon. It's a little bit different when you draft a guy like 20s. Well, they drafted him late, yeah, right?
24th.
24th, something like that. Something so it's a little bit more understandable there. But, you know, when you have a top 10 pick, you start him. I mean, that's just how it is. There's you don't have time anymore. He's seen, I think, something from him that makes him think that he's the best option.
So the 49ers signed wide receiver Kendrick Bourne after Juan Jennings suffered an injury in their opener on Sunday. On top of that, 49ers are also dealing with some other injuries. Brock Purdy, George Kittle could both be out for week two. George has a hamstring issue. Brock is dealing with left shoulder and toe injuries. Brock seems like he could be back by the time the Falcons play, but George Kittle could be out 3 to 5 weeks. And would they play October 19th, I believe?
Yeah.
So it'll be close.
Yeah. What is in the water out there for that team at that team facility, man? They are always beat up. I mean, always beat up.
Mm-hmm.
That team, well, we talk about injury issues with us on offense, time and time again. They are always without like five players on any given week, it seems like. And I'm talking about offense, defense. I mean, you go back to the Super Bowl Achilles injury. You go, they go back to the championship game they were playing down to the third string quarterback. There's just so much craziness that goes on with that team. And Christian McCaffrey's calf. I mean, it's just every freaking week we hear something about San Fran and the injuries out there.
I don't know what to tell you. My fantasy team wants Brock Purdy. Our fantasy team wants Brock Purdy to recover. The George Kittle thing is it's a big deal. I mean, so is Juwan Jennings. Don't get me wrong. It's a big deal. So I don't know what to tell you. I don't know why. I mean, the Christian McCaffrey thing just is a little bit different with them. You know, you knew what his injury history was when you traded for him.
The George Kittle is the best multi-use tight end in the NFL. He's the, like, when you have to run routes and you have to block at the line of scrimmage, in terms of being well-rounded, he's the best one in the NFL.
I totally agree.
He is unbelievable and changes everything you're trying to do offensively.
I totally agree. The guy plays with a different mentality, too.
Well, we are up against it, but I do want to mention one other injury that could affect a Falcons game. Carolina Panthers defensive tackle Tershawn Wharton will miss 2 to 4 weeks with a hamstring injury.
That is massive for the Falcons. He is a guy they signed in the offseason, and after the film I watched this morning, you don't want him in the lineup. Let me just put it that way.
And Derek Brown's back, right? So having to go – and Derek Brown owns Chris Lindstrom. I'm sorry, I love Lindstrom. He's my guy, but he owns him.
Would probably be the first one to tell you.
And I'm going to tell you something.
He'd probably be like, yep.
That's why I get back to people who want to argue about play calling. That's all great. We can argue play calling all you want. And you're right on a lot of what you say. I believe what you say. But if you can't win your battle at the point of attack, it doesn't matter. Everything else is erroneous.
Well, coming up, Braves GM Alex Anthopoulos revealed some pretty bad news yesterday, and we will talk about who is out now for the Braves. Going to switch gears a little bit. Plus, it's Top 5 Tuesday. Bo is in charge.
My hardest road environments in the NFL to play in. Next on the Morning Shift, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and
the Odyssey app.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. It is the Morning Shift. I'm Allie Mack with Mike Johnson, Bo Morgan. This segment is presented by John Foy and Associates. Experienced personal injury attorneys get the strong arm. Top 5 Tuesday is coming up. Always a controversial time. Bo is in charge. Top 5 toughest NFL stadiums to play in.
And I'm glad you brought that up, too, because we are going to do the wake-up call coming up at 8 o'clock. I talked about it a minute ago. I want to hear from anybody that's ever traveled to other NFL stadiums. And honestly, I think we open that up to what's the coolest like venue outside of Atlanta mm-hmm. that you've been able to travel to and witness a sporting event. Because, man, there's some really cool events. I wonder if anybody's ever been to like, you know, Premier League soccer game, things like that.
I've been to one.
I know. That's pretty cool. I would love to attend something like that. Maybe an Australian rugby.
Yeah.
You know, like that's.
Wes Durham and I went and had a, we had a you know, a Squid and Wes's big day out when we were in London a few years ago. And we went to, we had lunch. We went and we rode the, what do they call it over there? That, the tube.
Oh, okay.
Or whatever they call it. And, you know, we went to the West Ham game and then we rode the tube back and then that was it.
Well, that'll be coming up in just a few minutes. And if you are heading to Saturday's big game in Knoxville, make sure to make a pit stop at Twin Peaks in Chattanooga. This Friday, Dukes and Bell will be there broadcasting live from 2 to 6 p.m., breaking down Saturday's matchup while enjoying the food, drinks, and scenic views at Twin Peaks in Chattanooga. It's an easy stop off of I-75 at the state line. That is Dukes and Bell this Friday. Now, before we get to the Braves, bad news. Did Strider lose a bet? Did you guys see this last night? He is clean shaven.
You mean Rookie of the Year? That's what he looked like. I mean, holy smokes. Did you see this, Mike? He looks like he's 13.
Yeah.
I never knew what a mustache could do for a man.
If I ever had any thoughts of shaving my beard, it went by the wayside with that one. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need that look in my life. My wife has literally never seen my chin. Literally never seen my chin. And I've known her a long time.
Yeah, Amy has seen mine because I did lose a bet one time and shaved my beard. I need to lose 15 pounds if I ever want to shave my beard because I don't because then Amy will see not one but two chins.
Yeah.
I have never seen Grant clean shaven. I don't think I ever will, and that is fine by me.
Well, yeah, I mean that goes against
other than his head.
If Grant shaves his beard, that's half of your look. That you like.
Do you ever help him with a straight razor on the noggin?
No, he's got it. Ball?
He doesn't.
He's been doing that
he doesn't use like a cream or anything. You know, the Nair.
Well,
it doesn't go that route.
No. Oh, okay. Can you imagine? You would get chemical burns up there.
Would you?
Yes.
I don't know. I've never used it. No, some people do.
Does he have a special razor?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
But how does he not cut himself?
I don't. These are questions you can ask him.
Does he ever have like a piece of tissue on his like?
I need the answers to these. I need these answers.
Well, you've interrogated a lot of people lately.
Are you nervous about your hairline or something? Do you need help?
I've always been nervous about mine.
Well,
I am very self-conscious about my hairline going away.
My hairline retreated from like 17 to 20, and then it just stopped. And so I don't think so.
Let me see. Pull your hat off real quick. It's been like that since you were 20?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, it's been this way for a long time. But that said.
That's how I met him.
That yeah. Yeah. See? Yeah. Yeah. thank you. That's twice a day you stood up for me. But that said, I have always been in the stance that if it starts retreating in like a cul-de-sac, then I'm just going Stone Cold or Grant McCauley.
Bingo.
I guess you
could
say.
That's how I feel about it as well.
So I need to know these things. Yes, I need answers.
The problem is you never know if you have a good-looking head until it's shaved. You know what I mean? Like,
it's true.
I might have like the old bulldog look up top with the ripples. You know what I mean?
I'm trying to imagine a bald Mike or a bald Bo, and yeah. I just can't do it right now.
I know multiple people that have taken that route recently. And
listen, it's a good look. If you have to go that way, I approve. All right, we got to get back on track because we do have Top 5 Tuesday and you need time. Basically, Alex Anthopoulos came out yesterday and said Sean Murphy has been dealing with a hip issue for 3 years and is just now going to get it treated because the pain has become unbearable.
First off, you buried the lead. A skinny Alex Anthopoulos.
That's true.
Due to water fasting, which some people, not anyone in this room, but some people that used to sit in this room used to say that it didn't work. And it does work. Ha! The second part is you know what?
Mischaracterizing that a little bit.
No, yeah. Not really. This is probably, this is his third year with the Braves, right? You know, they've been in contention every year that he's been here. This is year three. They're not in contention. What's better? What better timing than going ahead, getting as fully healthy as you can? That's another piece that you hope is going to be there next year. And not to mention, it gives Drake Baldwin the rest of the season to many people have been fans have been clamoring for him to get as many at-bats as he can to try to close out the Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. Did you also notice, speaking of at-bats, did you also notice that Ronald was hitting six last night? Haesung Kim was in the cleanup hole, Drake Baldwin in the five. Just little bit of wrinkle thrown in there, and not that it ended in a crazy offensive output, but you know, you do win the game, obviously, and that's a huge thing.
Yeah, he. I think that, you know, Alex talked about the fact that Brian Sinker's going nowhere unless he wants to.
Yeah,
and he asked that about Brian Sinker's future. He goes, "Hey, Sinker's a Braves lifer. He'll be in his organization. Hear me out for a second. I don't know what the plan is for Sinker. I tend to believe he's going to walk away on his own. I know the contract's up, but I've always tended to believe this was his last year managing based on just what I've heard and seen and general knowledge. So if he's not, then Sinker's probably trying to, you know, plug people in certain places and see how they can then play. I'm not saying Ronnie's going to bat sixth. I think that is a product of his slump.
Of course.
And also both seeing Hyesung Kim and how he kind of performs in the leadoff.
Yeah, I when Alex said they haven't even started that process, I was a little bit let down. I don't know if I even believe him, but you know, that's neither here nor there. I just, like, if you don't know who your manager is going to be next year and it's almost mid September, you should probably start figuring that out. That's my thing.
I'm thinking Snicker's going to be there. I mean, it's going to be his 50th year. I think he will.
I think he's ready to hang up the cleats.
Got his 800th win last night.
I mean, he's been here 60 years, so it's his call. Well, I can tell you that Baron Burton's W Sauce and Fireshire Breakfast Sauce too, is all used probably at most of these stadiums, if it's not, should be. And you know what? Get some New Realm Brewing in your life there at these as well. Let's go ahead and get the honorable mentions. And you guys are willing to pop in with short comments if you want, but my two honorable mentions are two places that are extremely tough to play in, especially come playoff time or late in the year. That is Heinz Field in Pittsburgh. Not sure if it's still called that. I don't care. It's what it was when I was there. Or Invesco Field in Denver, which used to be Mile High, still is to me. Those places are brutal to play in. All right. I told you that the 5 had a 5A and a 5B. In honor of going from last to first, Dylan, let's start with 5B.
Number 5.
Arrowhead Stadium.
Dude, I blanked twice this morning, Allie. I said, I don't know if he's watching Braves tape in there or FSU film. And I was wrong on both.
Arrowhead, I rolled in there. First road trip ever, 2012. Mike, you were in that game.
Yeah, I played in that game.
I'm getting flicked off. It is like 10 in the morning. I could smell barbecue. I was like, holy crap, this is living up to it. 5A, we don't need 5 again, sound effect. But this place is known for the loudest stadium in the NFL. I beg the differ on a couple with what I think two of mine that are higher is, and that is Lumen Field in Seattle. This place is really cool to play in. They had the 12th man. It's loud. The weather is a factor. One of my favorite places to do a game.
Yeah, it's a good spot.
All right, Dylan, next.
Number 4.
I think we all know that Dylan's favorite team plays at the Lincoln Financial Field. The weather can be a factor. The crowd is loud. It is hostile, and they throw batteries at Santa Claus.
Snowballs, batteries, whatever it is.
It's a rough place to play.
It is a rough place to play. I've been on that one as well.
I'm going to tell you. Now, I'm going to set this up. 2 and 3 are interchangeable for me, but okay. I've been to both multiple times. In fact, I think I'm going to number 3 this weekend.
Number 3.
That's right. I don't know the name of the stadium because I don't really care. It's something with a bank, I think. But the Viking Stadium with the skull clap is a phenomenal atmosphere. I am telling you, it is absolutely as loud as a stadium as I have ever been in. 2019, I believe it was. It was Lindstrom's rookie year, McGarry's rookie year. They came out, got on top of us like 21-0 early, and it never quieted down. Last year, the same.
If you ask Tyson Klebo, Justin Blaylock, Todd McClure, the hardest place to play, they would all co-sign and say this one is at the top of the list.
Yeah, unbelievable environment. All right, next.
Number 2.
Look. Lambeau Field, baby.
I didn't Green see Bay. This one coming.
The weather, the crowd. You roll in literally through a subdivision. You're just driving through a subdivision, and all of a sudden, boom. There is Lambeau Field. It is amazing. It can be cold. It can be wet and snowy. The crowd is amazing. There's a reason why they didn't lose a road playoff game there for almost until 2002, I believe, Michael Vick.
There you go.
And Dylan, let's crown this thing.
Number one.
If you don't know, every time they score,
you better call somebody.
The Yin Yang Twins, who are from Atlanta, and they do the video with a black and gold hat that has an A on it. It looks like a Braves A. It is Caesars Superdome, guys. The New Orleans Saints have the best home field advantage to me that I've gone to. Now, look, I'm not saying that Minnesota or the Link or Lambeau or Lumen or Arrowhead or even Mile High or Heinz Field aren't better. But what I'm telling you, as a Falcon, this is the toughest environment to go in. I've been on the road. This is, I think, year 14 for me traveling. Got two wins.
Yeah.
Two wins.
That's a tough place to win, man.
It's a tough place to play, tough place to win. The lighting is weird. It's so loud. It's hard.
One of these days they'll have to replace it, and I don't know how it's even possible because that place is so unique and has so much history. I mean, it is the football version of Madison Square Garden.
That's a really good call. Yeah. There's been national championships. There's been Super Bowls. I mean, it's
sometimes
had it
lights
all.
Even go out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we are going to take Bo's list into the wake-up call. 404-726-0929. What's the toughest stadium, in your opinion, or what's the coolest stadium or venue you have ever been to? And, of course, we are still taking your Falcons reaction. 404-726-0929. The wake-up call is next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why it's not
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.